Good morning, church. I am glad to be here this morning, and I'm glad to be with my family and my granddaughter here in Washington. However, I regret the fact that we won't be with you at the 11 o'clock service. I so look forward to preaching to people person in person. But these plans were made way, way back before we even thought about being outside today. This passage, the passage that Reverend Don read for us today, is about suffering and changing and growing from the suffering, and about people doubting your change and growth. Jesus is hung until dead on the cross, but he defeats death and rises from the dead and returns to the disciples. They are at first frightened, but Jesus assures them that indeed it is him. The disciples, though they celebrate his return, still hold some reservations about who he actually is. They're still disbelieving on some level that this is indeed their Rebbe. They seem to be uncomfortable with this change of Jesus. I mean, dead things should stay dead. I had the same experience, though less dramatic, several years ago. For many years, we had vacation in Wells, Maine. We were there the month of July every year and pretty consistently stayed in the same beach house. When we didn't stay in that house, we still stayed in that same area. There were many people who followed the same vacationing patterns as we did, and we got to know them. There was little contact with them throughout the year, but we were a pretty tight little community every July on the beach in Wales. Well, in August of 2002, I took myself into treatment for my progressive disease of alcoholism. Nothing dramatic had occurred in my life. I was, just as we say in AA, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'd had enough of the mental and physical daily pain of the constant pursuit of a high that consistently escaped me. I'd had enough of the look of fear and disappointment on my family's faces. I had had enough of the suffering. After I completed my course of inpatient treatment and left the treatment center, I left there to pursue a life that revolved around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, 11 months later, in July of 2003, I returned to Wells for our July vacation. I literally cannot count the number of people who approached me with a look of surprise and bewilderment on their faces. Comments like, is it really you? Or you have changed? Or you actually got younger over the past year? You seem relaxed, very happy. What happened, I was asked. Someone even said to me, whatever it is you got, I want some of. There were people who commented and questioned the change almost daily, and their questions became more penetrating, even invasive every day. While they shared the joy and the changes because they all considered them as positive, they were all very dubious and curious about it. Like the disciples reacting to a resurrected Jesus, my old friends, though delighted to see the change in me, were curious and even dubious about the change. That phenomenon is not at all unusual for people entering into recovery. For many, it even goes a step further. There are very few movies that I have seen that I think accurately depict addiction or the recovery process. In 1994, Meg Ryan and Andy Garcia teamed up and did the movie When a Man Loves a Woman. In the movie, Ryan plays the part of an alcoholic wife married to an airline pilot raising two girls. The movie, in my view, accurately depicts, I think, what we call a functioning alcoholic. The woman goes into treatment and comes out and successfully pursues a life of change, growth, recovery. Her husband, however, cannot handle the change. He covertly and I think unknowingly undermines her recovery. He never overtly says it, but she knows it. He actually prefers her as an active drunk. Her as an active drunk and he as the rescuer suits his needs. His discomfort with her healthy growth ultimately ends the relationship. The recovering drunk, in order to protect herself, rejects her non-addicted husband. Jesus is not going to an explanation at the time about his return to life. He really at first simply does what alive people do. He simply manifested a basic human physical need and asked for something to eat. So must we, people who undergo a transformation in our lives. That summer in Maine, I explained to a precious few people the explanation for the change in me. I simply lived my new life. For those of you out there who can hear me and want to make a change, you want to become a new person, be prepared for the reality that many people will not be able to accept the change. A friend of mine lost 200 pounds. Of course, that required a lot of change. Losing the weight and maintaining the loss required a lot of work on herself and constant vigilance to maintain the weight loss. She was forced to make the difficult decision to drastically reduce her contact with her family, particularly her mother. You see, they could not develop a new way of relating to her. They could not handle the new her. Her mother could find no way of relating to her except the old way, and the old way was through food. Her mother, bottom line, preferred her eating in fat rather than being selective about what she ate and maintaining a healthy weight. So be like Jesus, change and become a new person. Lift yourself up from your destructive behaviors and become a new person. From the depths of your depression, take your medication, go to your groups, practice what you learn and resurrect yourself. But know that everyone will not delight in or support your resurrection. There will be those who are simply confused, but there will also be those who want to keep you depressed. They will want to keep you your depressed self because that's the person they are comfortable with. Or they will want you to stay in the suffering because it meets their needs. A person who perceives themselves as a rescuer needs somebody to rescue. And trust me, I know the pain, the disappointment, and the frustration of your change not being accepted. I have experienced it and I see it all the time. I see it on a brother's face who has done his time in jail, has completed an education or new training, has gotten clean, and then gets turned down for a job because of a crime that he committed 10 years ago. And Jesus' suffering was not in vain. Jesus' suffering and death was for us. Jesus died so that we may live. Jesus died so that repentance and forgiveness of sins can be proclaimed in his name to all nations. Jesus' suffering was not in vain. So I challenge you once again to be like Jesus. Do not let your suffering be in vain, using your suffering to help somebody else. If you have suffered from the darkness, the fright, the alienation of schizophrenia, if you have responded through your schizophrenia to reality you know to be false and you recover, if you have learned to manage your schizophrenia and you now live a normal life, use your suffering to help somebody else. You can help another schizophrenic like nobody else can. And something strange will happen, I guarantee you. Something paradoxical will happen, I guarantee you. That schizophrenic you reach out to help, that person will do more to help you maintain your sanity than you will do for them. Over 80 years ago, two addicted men got together. One night, Bill Wilson and Robert Smith, a drunk and a junkie, got together and talked about their condition, their lives, their suffering, and their desperation. Bill W. had tried every means to recover known and all had failed. He continued to drink despite his best efforts. Dr. Bob had seen professionally what drugs and alcohol had done to people, and he himself was an active addict. Dr. Bob knew professionally and Bill knew through experience how hopeless alcoholism was. But they discovered something that night. They discovered that talking with each other relieved themselves, at least temporarily, of the desire to use. They discovered that what they had experienced, what they had suffered, could help another addict. They also discovered that the very act of reaching out to another alcoholic helped them not to drink. Their suffering was not in vain. And so at the Open Hearth, an institution I am blessed to be a part of, we do not simply house homeless men. We're not simply a shelter. We seek to help homeless men transform themselves into productive citizens and family members. We do not simply house men transitioning from prison. We seek to help them help themselves to live a crime-free life by providing them with viable alternatives. We reach out to the addicted, the chronically mentally ill. We welcome with open arms those men who have experienced a life of failure, rejection, and pain. In short, we cater to the very men most people try to avoid. And at the Open Hearth, we do not try to forget the pain we have suffered in life, nor the misery that we have inflicted. Quite the opposite. We are open about our suffering. We share our pain. We use our experience to help others who are walking the same path we did. And most of the staff are alcoholics addicts, mentally ill, felons, and some are all of the above. We are probably the one place in town where having a mental illness or a felony record is something you find a way to weave into your interview when applying for a job, rather than trying to hide it or avoid it. To paraphrase St. Francis of Assisi, at the Open Hearth, we preach recovery at all times, and when necessary, we use words. What Bill W. and Dr. Bob discovered was that nobody can help an alcoholic like another alcoholic. And what we have discovered over the years is that the very same principles apply to other disorders. Thus, the proliferation of 12-step programs like Overeaters Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and Sex Offenders Anonymous. So if you have suffered, and if you have survived the suffering, reach out to somebody who's still suffering. Use your suffering, like Jesus, to help somebody else. Many of you know I have a fascination for and an admiration for Mary Magdalene. My fascination with her began when I heard Bishop Curry talking about her in a sermon one day. I even included several of you in my interest when I invited you to join me in an adult education to study her. Mary was devoted to Jesus. Mary stood there at the foot of the cross and stayed with my Jesus while he died. Two disciples betrayed my Jesus, but Mary remained openly loyal until the end. With the exception of one, the male disciples were in hiding, scared, locked behind doors at the crucifixion, but not Mary. Oh, and by the way, Mary was in recovery. Yes, she was. According to Luke, she had demons cast out of her. That means she was mentally ill, probably a schizophrenic. Mary was devoted to Jesus and stood by him when most others abandoned him. She sought to serve him when others were in hiding. And because she wanted so badly to serve him, even in death, she was one of the first to discover an empty tomb where the body of Jesus had been laid. And she was the first to whom Jesus made his resurrected presence known. I want to be like Mary. I want to join with others in recovery, others who have resurrected their lives, others who have suffered. I want to be like those people who have suffered and use their suffering to help others. I invite you to join me. Be like Mary and serve to seek Jesus even when it seems like all others have abandoned him. Even when all the faithful seem to be hiding, even when Jesus seems to be nowhere around, be like Mary Magdalene and go looking for him. And remember this, the person who stayed with Jesus until he died was a woman in recovery. The first person to see the empty tomb was a woman in recovery. And the Jesus chose to appear to after his resurrection was a woman in recovery from mental illness. It is a woman in recovery who was the apostle to the apostles. Yes, recovery, resurrection is possible, even though others question it, doubt it, and seek to undermine it. And yes, your suffering can be used to help others. Amen.